put you down for a while. Well, you know I can't quit you, baby. But I got to put you down for a while.
All right. Hey, everybody. Patrick Connor here, and welcome to another episode of Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I am, of course, here with Bryn Jonathan Butler, my buddy and author, filmmaker, just all-around good dude. And we're here to talk about some Teofimo Lopez Jr. versus Vasily Lomachenko. Man, what'd you think of that fight?
I think it was a combination of things. I mean, and also, it's hard to talk about the fight without the reaction of the fight, and I think the way it was packaged, but Lomachenko basically being hailed as the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I think we're looking for greatness every time he steps up. But, I mean, he looked like he was fighting a middleweight out there with Teofimo Lopez. And, I mean, if I was working backwards from what I saw, I'd say it looked like Loma had COVID and Lopez would probably test positive for a lot of other things in terms of the size that he brought in. I just thought it just looked like just two glaring weight classes, similar to what Loma looked like compared to Rigo, who was just so much bigger. And somebody that timid for seven rounds was just not what we expected from somebody as skilled and talented as Lomachenko. But I guess he was just a little bit gun shy because Lopez just looked so powerful. But my view was, and I understand that people are now getting upset about this take, is just that I thought Lomachenko was very disappointing. I give credit to Lopez for the performance he put on. I thought he definitely won the fight by two rounds, probably maybe three. But Lomachenko, I thought, gave the fight away. I thought if he fought the way he did in the last third of the fight all the way through, I think he would have won the fight, but I guess he was just too afraid to risk what was involved in fighting to win for the whole fight. So credit to Lopez for that. But also, I think a lot of disappointment about Lomachenko. I don't see this as a coronation of Lopez being like assuming the role that Lomachenko had. It seemed more like Lomachenko kind of let his supporters down, I thought. But absolutely no question that Lopez won the fight, looked devastatingly powerful, but didn't land a lot of really great punches. And it was just strange to see Lomachenko so timid for so long before he really got willing to exchange and take the fight to Lopez.
I think similarly to, and I'm not comparing these two fights in the sense that I believe that they were the same, but just that in the reaction to them, when Lomachenko beat Rigondo, there's your Rigondo mention, by the way. I already got it in for you.
Thank you.
You know, when Lomachenko beat Rigondo, there was a large tendency, which I understand and at least at part agree with, that Rigondo was really disappointing. And that, yes, obviously it was, at least to some degree, what Lomachenko was doing in there that made Rigondo fight the way that he did or not fight. But that even compared to other performances and even more recent performances, it like looked like a different dude. And yeah, even since then, he's turned in performances where that almost looked like a somewhat anomalous performance. And so I think it's difficult to really suss out exactly what the cause of what we saw was without having either another fight between the two or seeing what they both, you know, at least one or both look like on the other side of this fight. Meaning, is Lomachenko going to go on to look more or less how he looked against everybody else after this? And if he does, then it's worth examining whether or not Teofimo Lopez is just that good, or you know, there are a whole bunch of questions you could be answering here, a whole bunch of types of things you could be assigning as far as explanation. But yeah, I think that it's fair, at least on some level, to, you can't not credit Lopez, obviously, which is, I know, not what you were doing, but you do have to say Lomachenko looked different. And I think that part of the trap that many people fell into and fall into, not because anybody's doing anything nefarious per se, but just because it's a tendency. They hear the commentators for like 3 or 4 rounds straight with the downloading information fucking tripe. I get it, man. You got to come up with some, he's the Matrix, you know, got to fucking come out with some, he's a supercomputer who's stuck on planet Mars or some fucking thing. I get it, dude. You got to trademark some shit. I get it. But it's, the problem is that they then almost like create this self-serving narrative that they have to go with. And then the way that they're talking about it also suggests that, in my opinion, Lomachenko was doing something that he wasn't doing, or that he was doing better than he was really doing, to the point where you have a guy like Andre Ward, who I generally speaking respect, scoring that fight a draw, which in my opinion just didn't fucking happen whatsoever. And, you know, it's I think a lot of people kind of fell into that trap. And so they started looking for what Lomachenko was or wasn't doing instead of what Lopez was doing. And one thing Lopez was doing, and again, I'm not negating what you said, but one thing Lopez was doing was the exact same type of thing you should be doing against a guy who moves the way that Lomachenko does and relies on reflexes, the way that reflexes and speed the way Lomachenko does, is jabbing and consistently jabbing and going to the body. So he really was able to upset Lomachenko's rhythm just on a purely technical level here, not talking about mindset or anything like that. He was able to disrupt Lomachenko's rhythm and just kind of tactically do what he was supposed to do. So yeah there's a lot of room for kind of interpretation as far as what happened, but Lomachenko did look different. It's really tough to argue that, starting in whatever it was, round 7 or 8, when he actually started getting his ass moving. There were moments where Lopez almost kind of looked like, oh shit, he's punching back and what do I do? But luckily he was able to wrest control of the situation and get himself back in. But one thing I do kind of want to directly address as far as what you said is, I know many people say, oh, it's a cop-out to say Lopez was bigger. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But it's also, I think, a fact. I mean, yeah. I don't know what their ringside weight was. I don't know if they even took it. But it definitely looked as if Lopez was noticeably bigger than Lomachenko. And it's not unfair to say that Lomachenko is not a big lightweight, if he's a lightweight at all. And to point to his previous fights to say, oh, well, he fought this lightweight and that weight, or that lightweight, to prove, so that means he's a lightweight. I guess it just means that he was more able to use his assets against those other guys, whereas Lopez, he wasn't. So anyway, I guess that's a long rebuttal to what you said. But yeah, Lomachenko didn't really look like what most of us expected him to look like.
I mean, I think there's a few things there, too. Is Lomachenko's 32. He'll be 33 in February. So he's got a 9-year age disadvantage here. I definitely thought Lopez, I mean, how much did he gain from what he weighed in at? 15 pounds at a minimum? Like, it was a big jump. But the age differential, the size differential, and I mean, let's look back at the Rigo fight with Lomachenko. After he won that fight, he was explicit the moment he won that this was not really a fair contest because of the size differential, because Rigo has no business fighting 2 weight classes above where he's comfortable. Now he's fighting a weight class below where he was fighting since he's turned professional. You know, he's fighting at 118, even though he just turned 40 years old. So I think this was a similar thing where Loma has just gone up too high. I think age is catching up to him a little bit. I thought his body didn't look as lean as it has in the past. Maybe that's the 14-month layoff. And again, the 14-month layoff, in terms of, that was something that Lopez identified as something he wanted to capitalize on. So I think all of these factors were at play in Lomachenko offering a pretty disappointing performance given the place that he occupies inside of boxing, being this transcendent generational star people are looking for greatness. And the times when he's being tested, stepping up, you know, did we see greatness when he fought Linares? I don't think so. I think he's definitely an A-level fighter, and I think he has the talent of an A-plus fighter, but I don't necessarily think that Lopez is an A-level fighter. I think he's a B to a B-plus level fighter. It's just, I think the weight differential and reach, I think he has 3 to 3.5 inches reach, which he utilized effectively. I mean, Lomachenko has to get into the pocket in order to land punches against a guy that has that reach and a power advantage, and he just did not seem willing to do it. I think he just recognized there was too much danger. And was he thinking that Lopez would tire out? Is he being a little more conservative with his own volume of punches? Not sure, but this was not what people expected with Lomachenko. And even when he stepped up his pressure and was starting to land cleanly, it just looks like he just doesn't have the power at that weight class or the ability to just impose his will and create angles, land 2-3 punches flush after he's found these angles that only he seems capable of finding. We just didn't see that guy. We didn't see that matrix level dexterity, footwork, timing, agility. He just looked a lot more limited. Now, by a lot more, I mean, even if he fell off 15-20% from his prime and being back down in a weight class where he was more comfortable, you know, 126. But these things make a big difference when you're fighting a young, hungry up-and-comer who showed a lot of will and determination, didn't like Lomachenko. So I thought there were some good moments toward the end, but you have to think, you know, now Lomachenko's lost 2 fights. I mean, the Salido one, I think, is still an asterisk loss because of the refereeing that was just as abhorrent in that fight.
Laughable. Absolutely laughable.
As
and I like, I like Salido, and I like the fact that on, I mean, you know, on some dirty level, I like the fact that he was willing to go in there and basically do whatever the fuck it took to get that win. You know, yep. I admire that. So I don't like it, but man, that fucking Lawrence Cole, dude, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought it was a hugely gutsy performance by Salido. I mean, aside from how filthy and dirty, and he absolutely should have been disqualified in that fight for half of what he did, let alone the totality of low blows. But that being said, he showed tremendous heart and grit against, you know, a hugely imposing figure like Lomachenko in terms of the advantages that he had over Salido in speed, youth, energy. You know, it was just sort of, I don't know that it exposed Lomachenko at that time, but I think what I was so impressed with Lomachenko after that fight was in no way did he lose kind of his market value from the loss. And he did not become a lesser fighter as a result of that fight. I think he became a grittier fighter, and there was a kind of meanness that was added to him in stopping all these fighters where they're quitting and the whole Nomachenko. I think you saw it. It was really interesting in the Rigo fight to see him, especially like being there and watching very closely in between rounds. Rigo just being the look on his face is just, I don't want any part of this. I've never seen this before. We have a similar level of talent and potential, but I can't keep up with this. And that's, I think, the first time in Rigo's career of however many hundred fights he's had as an amateur. And, you know, I think posterity is going to look at what he did to Donaire, where Donaire was at that time. I think that's going to age a lot better than it did at the time. I mean, it already is. But boy, stepping in there with Lomachenko was something that just shattered his will. And yet Lomachenko confronted with Lopez, I did not see a guy striving for greatness in that fight where there was some real legitimate risk. And so he got a second loss. The Letterman scorecard was shocking, that level. You know, Lopez deserves credit for the win, but I think a lot more we need to reevaluate the hype with Lomachenko, and it has nothing to do with his ability, nothing to do with his talent. and skills, but that quality that separates the greats from the very talented. I think we just saw maybe him move into a different category of fighter than the way he was being hyped after this performance. And I think that it's fair to call his greatness into question as a result of what Lopez exposed.
Totally. I mean, there are a number of different issues there. Some of them being mutually exclusive and some of them not. Some of them seemingly mutually exclusive when they're not. Like, for instance, the tendency to say, well, that guy was never shit. Not saying you are, obviously, but that is something that we often see in the wake of a fighter who is popular or a fighter who has a lot of notoriety or hype behind them losing. You know, they were never any good. They were always shit. Well, then it's difficult to turn around and credit the guy who won. I mean, I suppose if you're being fair, if you're being logical about it and you're not really doing either, fine, but that's not usually what we see. We usually say, yeah, I always told you Lopez was awesome and he's great, but I always told you Lomachenko was shit. Well, they can't really both be true, or at least, you know, not the way that you're thinking. I don't understand how that works. Like, you know, if this guy just beat something who was shit and that's it, then I don't know how you get that he's great, but okay. But I mean, there are, like I said, a number of different types of things there. Like, for instance, you said reevaluating the hype that Lomachenko has gotten and reevaluating him on, I guess, the pound for pound level or through some sort of pound for pound lens or something. I don't generally partake in those kinds of conversations or lists, not because I'm above them, but I don't enjoy them. Generally speaking, it's kind of a like mental masturbation. It's a bit of a waste of time. Cool, but not really getting anything done. It doesn't prove anything. It's just so subjective, but it does need to be kind of reevaluated from the standpoint of not just what the boxing savants thought of him and not just what the fucking nerds and the whatevers hipsters thought of him. I guess that is its own issue, but beyond that, financially, what's being invested into him, how much attention he's being paid and what opportunities he's getting or has gotten over other fighters who perhaps deserve them more. I mean, we all know that boxing is not necessarily a game of fucking deserving or not deserving, but nonetheless, you know, just speaking in terms of fairness here. And especially if a fighter is going to turn in a performance like that, if a fighter is going to Rigondo that shit for half the fight, you know, if a fighter is going to basically just be mesmerized, get old overnight, whatever your explanation is, to the point where he's almost just not throwing punches for that many rounds in a row, I think it's perfectly acceptable to call into question why that fighter is getting those opportunities, why that fighter is on the cover of magazines, why that fighter has as many Instagram followers, why he is getting that attention when others are not. You know, because after that, it seems very gimmicky. After a loss like that, it just comes across as very shallow and very clickbaity. Yay, he can do backflips during training while balancing a milk jug on his dick. Cool. But I mean, what the fuck? What is the great? But like, all right, but if you're going to turn in a performance like that immediately after all of that, then I don't care. Maybe a lot of people do, but to me, that's not worth a whole lot. So the other aspect of it, of course, which you had mentioned is, you know, what is that worth on Lopez's side? And that's fair. Like it's 100% fair. Is this a great fighter or an A-plus fighter we're talking about? Or is this a guy who benefited from perhaps the right time? And then, of course, the other thing you mentioned, the Julie Letterman card, but which has come up in the last day or two, the shoulder injury. Apparently, yeah. There's a report, and it's, you know what, it's probably true. That's not even the point. He probably did go into the fight with a shoulder injury because, you know what, fighters just go into fights injured. That's just a fact of boxing. It's a fact of hockey, NFL, basketball. Professional athletes go into things injured all of the time. And that's not to downplay an injury. I'm sure your shoulder's fucked up. Yeah, it's going to mess you up in a world-class fight where you have to use your shoulder. But beyond that, going into this fight, similar to kind of, you know, circling back around to what I said earlier, Rigondo talked a whole gang of shit going into that fight, Lomachenko. So when he turns in an egg, people are going to be like, fuck that guy. Rightfully yeah. so. That's fair. When you talk a gang of shit or spend, you know, a marked amount, notable amount of time in this pre-fight segments that they're putting together going, look, you know, you're like looking into the camera and like, hey, I feel good. This is the first time in a long time where I'm going into this fight. I have zero injuries. I'm 100%. No excuse. Like, you're like making a point to like say this shit and be all like, motherfucker. And then afterwards you're like, yeah, you know, I had a shoulder injury going in. I didn't really feel right. Man, come on, dude. It's probably true. He did have an injury, but I don't really want to hear it then if you made a point out of fucking how great you felt and all this type of shit. I'm just not going to hear it as an excuse. So the Letterman card, my kind of qualm about that is that I've seen a number of kind of people in the media and pundit type of people push back saying, and I mentioned this on Twitter, hey, Julie Letterman, her dad was great, so cut her a break. I loved Harold Letterman too, but I don't, this is irrelevant who Harold Letterman was to this situation. That means absolutely nothing, and I'm not going to cut her poor performance a break because of who her dad was. Or, hey, Julie Letterman, she's real nice. I've known her for a long time. I don't care how long you've known her, and I've never met her, so I don't know if she's nice. I'm talking about her performance. And so the third thing I've heard said is like, hey, man, that 11-1 scorecard, that's a lot closer to reality than Andre Ward's 6-6. You know what? That's probably true. But there were at least two somewhat clear rounds for Lomachenko. So an incorrect scorecard's an incorrect scorecard, whether it's incorrect by one round or five rounds. So, I mean, and I'm not talking about there's a singular objective way to score fights, because we know there's not. It's very subjective. But nonetheless, you know, there seemed to be at least two fairly clear rounds for Lomachenko. Many more? No. I had it 9-3 myself. But the point is, a wrong scorecard's a wrong scorecard. You know, if you're turning in a card that doesn't seem to reflect reality, whether it's off by this round or that many rounds, doesn't really matter that much to me. And especially when you have a history of turning in some wonky cards in big fight situations, that's a problem. And that's speaking to its whole separate issue of how incompetence is dealt with in boxing, which generally speaking, incompetence is dealt with by fucking promotion rather than in like the, you know, I don't want to say the real world, because that also is how incompetence is dealt with in corporations. But point is, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And it kind of delegitimizes it somewhat, I guess. But rewinding only slightly as far as Lopez goes, I don't want to get too far away from the discussion of Lopez, because what it seemed to me happened, as far as, you know, in the ring, what went down? Why did Lomachenko look that way? Well, I feel as though it's probably a blend of some of the things we've been talking about. Lomachenko had 400 whatever amateur fights. That does not happen in a vacuum. That's not an excuse. It's not me saying, you know, oh, I got my pick wrong, so I'm going to point fights. I said in my little solo pre-fight podcast thing that the amateur fights could at some point add up. And is that what happened here? I don't know. It certainly is possible, because that tends to be what fighters look like when they start getting old or are unable to pull the trigger. He looked, generally speaking, fairly defensively sound, even though he was not, you know, doing well in the first half of the fight. He wasn't getting his ass kicked all over the ring. He was still fairly, you know, with it in terms of reflexes. He just wasn't punching. He seemed to see the opportunities, wasn't taking them. That's basically the classic description of a fighter getting old. So is that what happened? I think that that's at least part of what happened. But I think also another portion of what happened is he might have been possibly psychologically thrown off by having a fighter so dialed in on defeating him as Lopez was. But beyond that, I personally think the biggest percentage of it, if you're going to like slice this into a pie or something, is that basically Lomachenko underestimated the speed and reflexes of Lopez as well. that as soon as he got in there, and somebody had mentioned this on social media, but there's a big difference between what you see on video and what you are studying and then actually being in there. And while I don't think that that is the all-encompassing reason, it certainly also seemed that once Lomachenko got in there, he wasn't so much scared of the power as he was, because he was at times stepping into the pocket and trying to land, just not successfully. But he seemed like he was very taken aback by the fact that he was not able to just have his way and not able to circle around and find those angles like you were talking about earlier, where he seems so precognitive against other fighters. He didn't have that against Lopez. And a big part of that was the technical things that I was talking about earlier, throwing a jab, disrupting rhythm, going to the body. But, you know, just even having the physical capability on Lopez's side that he had, he surprised Lomachenko, it seemed to me. And so that's also somewhat on Lomachenko in the sense that he didn't adjust. He apparently didn't have a second plan or wasn't able to even begin to implement it, because he didn't do anything. It wasn't until the second half of the fight where it kind of seemed like he got desperate and said, fuck this, I'm just going to start throwing. And obviously not with reckless abandon, but by opening up, creating better opportunities and doing much better. But he couldn't sustain it. And we got what we got. I definitely would be interested in seeing a rematch. But how would you think a rematch would play out? Is this a situation where, you know, you mentioned Lomachenko's record, and I'm with you in the sense that I'm not necessarily writing off the Salido loss. I'm not saying that it doesn't count, but there are definitely circumstances there. Nonetheless, simply looking at his record, 14-2, is not a particularly impressive record numerically. And does that kind of loss affect him going forward? What do you think happens?
I think he's so tough at this point and has so much victory behind him, you know, with, you know, almost 400 amateur fights and his pro record. I think he's really competitive. I think he has, you know, as good an attitude as you can have. Like, he just enjoys dominating his opponents. I think, you know, that drive that he has, but that's what made it so startling to see him in this fight. And I think in a rematch, what you would see, you know, again, like, even as small as he is, looking just a little less ripped. I wonder what to attribute that to in this fight. I'm not saying he was overweight, but he just didn't look like he normally does. I mean, he's got a really long torso, but, you know, he's one of these guys who seems like he could just walk on his hands for 2 or 3 days. He's just amazingly strong. And his just, you know, on top of all the agility and the dancing that he did to allow him to have a footwork that, I mean, is it fair to say he has the greatest footwork we've ever seen in boxing? I think so. Certainly the best footwork I've ever seen. I think he is an improved vessel to you know, go back and watch Rigondeau in the 2000 Olympics, 2004. I mean, he's dazzling, and he's a dancer at that point. We didn't get him in the pros until he was in his late 20s. You know, we didn't see him in his prime ever as a professional. And Lomachenko obviously has 2 Olympic gold medals as well, but was able to get going a little younger. But I wonder if they did it again and Lomachenko is more dialed in with the training, or maybe there's an injury, he can come in and it's an improved version from what we saw. I think the big question is going to be if he applies pressure consistently and more volume of punching, is he able not to get hit? Because I think that's the other feature, is Lopez is one of these fighters where his punches sound different than everybody else. There's an impact even when he's just hitting an elbow, hitting an arm, hitting a shoulder. If that's hitting you and you're in there and you're just aware I'm outgunned and this guy has the determination to stay in there. You're going to have to knock him out to stop him. You know, there's some fatigue issues, obviously, with Lopez toward the end of the fight, but he's definitely somebody that if Lomachenko was going to land two or three punches and not really put his weight behind them, like that was another feature, is that Lomachenko was not willing to really get much torque on his punches. He wanted to score. Is that Lopez was going to, after taking two or three punches, was going to throw something big in return. And that's a place where we see aging as well, is that's one of the hardest places to maintain your discipline, is just defensive responsibility, to move your head after you throw a series, find a new angle, get out of the way. That's usually the first thing that goes. And nobody was better at that, I think, ever, maybe in the history of boxing, than Lomachenko, or at least he could do it in a way that was so dazzling. We'd never seen anybody create angles the way he was doing. So I probably think, I mean, if I was betting, they go into a rematch, I think Lopez will have more confidence. Even if Lomachenko improves, if what he wants to do is get in there and exchange early on, I see him getting caught. The same way he was caught by Linares with not a spectacular punch, just punch through the guard. You know, we're going to see, like with Roy Jones a little bit, that Lomachenko operating at the level that he was is a result of, yes, all the training and discipline and talent. But as you slow down a little bit, the style that you've calibrated to be befitting to that talent and youth and training needs to be adjusted. Not like Muhammad Ali adjusted post the 3 years he was out of boxing, but there needs to be some adjustment. Or a Roy Jones can go from maybe the most talented, one of the most talented fighters ever, to almost a pedestrian fighter, because the chin is such an Achilles heel to his game, and he never had the fundamentals to really rely on his defense. Let's say the way Bernard Hopkins was able to get such longevity out of tremendous fundamentals on top of all, you know, his discipline and determination and all of those, you know, his savviness in the ring and ring IQ is off the charts. Was Roy Jones' ring IQ off the charts, or was it about his physical supremacy? I hear him giving all these interviews about how he never got credit for what a great defensive fighter he was, but we can see when he's reliant on his defense, a lot of people are taking him out, and obviously he's getting older, and that needs to play a role of what eroded this monument to supremacy in the sport. But I'd be a little worried for Lomachenko in the next fight. I think maybe he needs to find a different game plan somewhere in the middle of applying more pressure. But if he gets in a brawl with Lopez, I think he's going to get knocked out, because I don't know that he has a great chin. I think he has all the determination that's necessary for his Olympic pedigree and how great he's looked at moments. But it looked like there was a timidity in this fight.
Yeah.
And I don't see him having the power, certainly at 130, 135, where he can stop a fight. And we saw him in desperation try to come back at this. And you just have to wonder, why did it take so long for him to put his foot on the gas? If he didn't recognize some limitations and some threats, that he just reasoned, I'd rather survive this fight than put myself at too much risk. And it's curious to try to assess why that was.
No, that's totally fair. And I think that it kind of, what you were talking about a moment ago, kind of like what happens to fighters as far as when they start to go downhill or start to lose or whatever, it speaks a little bit to what I was saying earlier, in my opinion, that it's not the only singular answer to this, but when you have a lot of fighters who are very reliant, like a Roy Jones, for instance, on their reflexes, very reliant on, you know, they do a lot of things very unorthodox, but are only able to do those unorthodox things because of their reflexes and because of their speed, that when they're forced to, for whatever reason, figure out how to win fights in a different way, whether it's because their speed is eroding or their reflexes are no longer there, or they don't have a real great chin and are now having to, you know, gut some fights out or whatever the case may be. Once they're having to not rely on those reflexes, it's at that point you kind of start to see where their skills are at or what they were able to build up in terms of a repertoire, where you have a guy like Bernard Hopkins that when his reflexes clearly started going, he knew what to do. He had been in there so much that he understood the kind of movements he would have to make even blindly. You know, he knew what most fighters were going to do after throwing a right hand, you know, to the point where all he would have to know is that fighter is throwing a right hand, and he doesn't have to visibly see the rest. He can just move in a way that he knows they're probably going to follow up and 98% of the time be correct. And I think that what you're seeing, and I don't want to get overly technical because I know it bores a lot of people, but I think that part of that is what we're seeing, you know, that a Roy Jones did not work in the gym to that degree on those kinds of things where Bernard Hopkins did. And so he didn't need his reflexes to that degree. Lomachenko, I think, is in a similar boat where he's very reliant on those reflexes, especially at a slightly higher weight. And I think that it's unfair, like we've said a few times, to kind of point to the weight and say, well, that's an excuse. I think that it's just a reality. You have a guy who is smaller than most lightweights winning those fights on that separation, you know, of reflexes and speed. He's not knocking most the knockouts he's scoring or the stoppages he's scoring are not some, you know, monster that's just thump, 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 you know, tearing through somebody. They're precision shots that he's timing, like you said, you know, those kind of angles that nobody else can reach and that guy does not see coming. That's why those stoppages happen and why those things occur. And that's why those punches sound the way that they sound, is because they're so solid. They're landing so flush. And he's getting literally, like, you know, about 100% of capability out of, you know, out of the possibility of that punch. And so when he's put in a position where that is not the case, he has trouble. And I think that we've also actually seen that previously, which you alluded to, perhaps not in this way, but against Linares, you know, Linares is a guy who himself is very sharp, you know, very fast, has good reflexes, even though he himself is eroded, but also savvier than Lomachenko in terms of having tricks in his bag. And we saw that against Lomachenko, where, you know, it just kind of like that basic boxing premise of, if that guy's faster than you, how do you beat him? Timing can beat speed. You know, speed can beat power, and timing can beat speed, and et cetera. It's, you know, it's a big weird circle that doesn't even really move in a circle. But that, anyway, yeah. The timing, the disruption, the tactical, blah, 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 and the size. These things all figured into why Lomachenko looked the way that he did and why Teofimo Lopez looked as good as he did. And it's 100% fair to ask going forward, well, how does Teofimo Lopez look against somebody like a Devin Haney? Or how does he look against somebody who is, you know, more willing to throw, quite frankly? And that's not an unfair question to ask. It's a question that we would, you know, we want answered, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here. But I mean, again, it's sort of like this flash of Lomachenko. Oh, great, we've got this guy in his prime and everything. But it's like, he'll be 33 in February. And where does he go from here? Does he go back down? Does he seek revenge from Lopez? You know, it'll be interesting to see where he goes with the next, I mean, 2 years of I think, being able physically to still be one of these supreme talents in the sport as far as athleticism. But he's going to have to make some adjustments. We saw that, and it seemed like he made an adjustment as an improvisation in this fight. I can't see that being strategy for just to give seven rounds away, basically, in this fight early on. I think he just, as you said, when they stepped in there, he recognized, I can't do what I wanted to do, so I need to do something else. And the plan B was maybe he'll get tired. I don't know, but it just didn't look like we've seen him before. Where, you know, even against Salido, frankly, I thought, did he really? It seemed like he met the willpower of Salido and looked flustered. He looked kind of intimidated and unsure of what to do. And for the first seven rounds of this fight, I mean, it was just him in there with a boss. And normally we've seen him showboat with fighters that he just egregiously outclassed and him mocking them. But when he was sort of put to the test here against somebody and there's real danger, there's some physical advantages in size and reach and youth. He did not seem game for that challenge. It looked like I'm going to do what I can to try to gut out a win, but it certainly didn't look like, oh, here we go. I finally met a nemesis where I'm going to show you just how great I am. And I'm going to show the public how great I am. It was quite the contrary. So I'm curious mentally how he is dealing with that performance and the choices he made in this fight, because there's a lot of different ways that that fight could have gone. This is the way that he chose to contribute to what we saw. And that raises a lot of questions about who he is and what his legacy will end up being.
And this is something that we've talked about on numerous occasions when it comes to the reaction to post-fight comments from fighters. So on some level, I have to say, obviously, you have to expect any world-class athlete, and especially a fighter, to they didn't believe they lost that fight. You know, so we've had even fighters who've gotten knocked clean the fuck out and been like, what do you mean I got knocked out? You know, was it against Molinares, Marlon Starling, you know, got knocked out, and it was a foul, but they interviewed him like 2 minutes later, which is, by the way, side note, stop fucking interviewing fighters that just got like blasted, bro. Like, it's no good. Just stop. But the guy's like, I didn't get knocked out. What do you mean I got knocked out? I didn't even get knocked down. The point is, you have to come to expect that from a fighter, that the mixture of hubris, you know, whether it's hubris or just supreme confidence, and the kind of mindset it takes to become a world-class athlete, period, you have to expect it. So, you know, moving on, the other part of that, though, is to hear a guy like Lomachenko, man, that's some sour-ass grapes coming from his mouth in the post-fight. Like, again, you know, you have to expect some level of blah, 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 but the dude's kind of just kind of bishing out a little bit, dude. I mean, I just don't like to hear that kind of whining coming from a fighter. The judges were against me, or now is the shoulder injury. It's disappointing, and it's kind of speaks to what you were talking about, in my opinion, where as a fighter, when in the face of a loss, I don't expect that fighter to be willing to die. That's the kind of stupid hyperbole that leads to icky bullshit in the world of boxing. But you also have to question it when a fighter finds himself in trouble, and not even necessarily like physical danger, like death per se, but just losing a fight and clearly losing a fight to the point where you can see on their face that they know they're losing a fight. So don't fucking lie, Lomachenko, but are they going to bite down on the gum shield and just fucking throw? Are they going to do something? Are they going to, like, even if it's shedding tears and just going, fuck it, you know, and, or are they going to just capitulate? Are they going to just kind of sit there and let it go? And unfortunately, for far too many rounds, Lomachenko was the second guy. And so you can't be that second guy for most of the fight and then afterward act like you were the first guy. That doesn't by and large, boxing fans can be real crappy, but they can see through that. And so I don't think that he's winning himself very many fans in the wake of this fight, how he's acting, even though in some rounds he did show heart and grit and determination. The way that he's acting on the hind end of this is just kind of, it's not attractive. So I do wonder, but you know, what he does from here. But I also have to wonder, so going into the fight, a big part of the storyline, whether it was manufactured or not, I don't really know. in that Blood, Sweat, and Tears special from Top Rank on YouTube, and I think on ESPN as well, they tried to really push the idea that Teofimo Lopez Jr. was at odds with his dad and kind of had a different view of how his career should go than his dad had, or perhaps why he's even in boxing. But that didn't really seem to bear out, and perhaps it's because he won. My concern beforehand was if he lost, you know, what that would do to him. So I do personally also wonder what's going to happen with their relationship. And obviously it's not a question you can answer, but what do you make of that? I mean, I know it's a Mark Kriegel special there with the daddy thing, but you know, what do you make of that?
Well, I think if we're not going to use Mark Kriegel as our authority on daddy issues, we need Wright Thompson to come in as the other expert on daddy issues to explore it. No, I think you're right. I mean, God, Kriegel goes to the well on that goddamn daddy thing with Lopez. You know, it's always going to be a little easier to be the challenger against somebody like Lomachenko than what it's going to be like for Lopez with Top Rank and a lot of people in the sport that see this as, you know, he beat the man, so he becomes the man. The question is, does he feel like he's the man? Does he feel like he's earned that spot? And does it feed into his ego in trying to defend it with even more vigilance and intensity? And we've seen for some people that does happen. You know, they get a sense of being a winner, and it supplies them with some kind of surplus of confidence. But most of the time it doesn't, you know, and I remember when Andy Ruiz Jr. was going into the rematch with Joshua and talking to Buster Douglas, talking to Michael Bent, talking to some people that surprised people with a big victory, and the following fight just being like half of what they were before they got the big when they got the big victory, just because what? They just couldn't muster the focus, the training wasn't there. They didn't step in there wanting to win. They changed into something where they're fighting to survive, or they're thrown off by success. Maybe they see themselves as kind of losers or unappreciated or whatever. But in Buster's case and Michael Bent's case, when they were looking at Ruiz, they said, oh no, you can tell, like, he's going to win again. It's going to be much easier. He's going to appreciate what he was able to accomplish, and he's going to solidify it. And of course, we saw the exact opposite. We saw somebody show up not training properly, overweight, put in a very lackluster performance. And as soon as it was over, there was, let me do it again. Like, I fucked this up, but I can come back from this. Doesn't work that way. You know, you get those opportunities. We're all trying to get into a room. I don't know where the room is for the people listening, but I mean, one of the tricks of life is find your way into that room, find a reason to stay there, and find a reason to be invited back. This is very important in life. And how many times you get an opportunity to come back to that room, it's rare. You're lucky to get there. Even no matter how much you deserve to be there, you are lucky if you get in. And it means, you know, it's where luck meets preparation. And to be lucky, you have to be close. These guys are willing to take this chance to get in there against a tough guy. But psychologically, I don't know. I don't know where Lopez is going to be. It seems like there's a lot of drama in his backstory that he was able to overcome to put on this performance. And I give him full credit for overcoming that, for winning this fight against one of the, you know, the man in boxing at this moment. But I think there's a danger. People come from chaos. Generally, they end up in chaos. And this could just be, you know, what's between the slices of bread that are chaos. And the next chapter is to head right back to what's familiar. And I take no pleasure in that. And I do think Lomachenko is an extraordinary fighter. I just think it's not just having it on paper, which he clearly does. It's also what you do with it. And Salido, and now this, is, you know, is that undertow against his legacy in marking anybody to be able to say, well, what happened here? If the guy's that good, what happened here? Is Is Lopez like a hallmark Hall of Fame fighter? No, I mean, we haven't seen that yet by any means, but I mean, he's a tough guy, but I mean, it's sort of like any number of fighters that we've seen that are just sort of ferocious, fearsome fighters, but it doesn't mean they're necessarily great. You know, Canelo also, I mean, that's another direction that could be a parallel for him, is I don't think we saw greatness with Canelo early on. Nobody was thinking, you know, there was a lot of talk when it was first raised about him going in against GGG, and it was like, well, you better stay away from that. But because of him being willing to step up and because of how he looked in those fights and subsequent fights, we did find greatness in Canelo. And it was even better because we didn't necessarily expect to find it in him. He surprised us because he continued and continues to get better. Even with all of his success and all of the money, he's adding confidence. He's adding tools to his game. And that's rare. That's what separates the ones that are truly great from the ones who aspire to it. Now, Lopez has an opportunity coming from this fight, looking forward, to show us that he can get better, he can improve. He's still very young. He's not even in his athletic prime yet at 23. He can physically get better. Mentally, can he improve from this? Or that he's going to have some trouble dealing with the success, which for a lot of fighters is where they start to go downhill. And I mean, more often than not, that is the case. Tyson coming off of Spinks did not improve as a fighter, and he was only 22 years old at the time. And, you know, you have to ask yourself why, like when you have this great opportunity of this very limited window, it's almost like when you watch Usain Bolt at the World Championships at the Olympics, when he's thrashing the competition, and he doesn't run hard all the way. There's always a part of me that's saying, when you're this amazing, when you're once in human history amazing, how could you not run through the finish line just so we can see just how good you are? And instead, he leaves you a little bit wondering because, you know, he pulls up 20 meters before the finish line or 10 meters before the finish line. And then very quickly, he's never in his prime again. It's gone. So I hope that we see Lopez step up, because I loved seeing Canelo step up the way he has and just continue to get better and better and better. But most of the time, history tells us that success is one of the hardest things for these guys to deal with. And so now Lopez rightfully is getting his taste of that success, and the public is rallying around him saying, you know, he beat the man in Top Rank and all of the hype. But only in Lopez's psyche do we know how well he's dealing with it. And generally, the strife with the dad and some of that chaos leads me to believe that we're going to have to see some real character for him to continue to improve and not be thrown off by all of the temptations of success to veer away from what got him here.
Yeah, I think that it was Tim Bradley, who I really like, by the way, so this is not to rail on him, but it was Tim Bradley who, in like an interview yesterday or the day before, said now that Teofimo Lopez beat the man at 135, he should move to 140. And I don't know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, maybe I'm idealistic, maybe under some stupid illusion that fighters could get back to fighting like 4 or 5 times a year, but I would love to see him actually take on several top lightweights and, you know, not necessarily clean out the division per se, but just face really good fighters at lightweight before moving up, because I just don't, unless he's having a problem making 135, I don't see a reason for it. But as to what you were saying, the conversation's been pushed so far to when you get a loss, it's like you're exposed and you're a piece of shit. You know, part of that of course is Floyd Mayweather, and not to, you know, blame him per se. A lot of it is the boxing landscape, but nonetheless, there was such emphasis placed on that undefeated record that now you experience a loss and you're totally shit. Whereas the fighters that Vasily Lomachenko lost to in Salido and Lopez were pretty good fighters, so he shouldn't be totally torn apart for those things. But nonetheless, there should be some sort of penance for absorbing them, especially with expectations that high. And, you know, et cetera. But in any event, yeah, I guess the only other thing I wanted to say about the fight card was that going into it, I didn't really preview a whole lot on my somewhat brief solo preview, mostly because while I saw some of these fights as, you know, potentially fun, none of them had a whole lot of name value. But one of the guys that did a great job and was pretty eye-opening was that dude Edward Berlanga, who I had talked about, who was the big puncher, the dude who was throwing shots like he's a, you know, Randy Johnson throwing pitches. I'm not sure if you watched the entire card, but wowzers, man.
Oh yeah, I mean that run of, what is it now, 15 first round knockouts?
It's like 14 or 15 or something like that. And
oh, love, man. It.
No, yeah,
I mean, he's a boss. I mean, he's just a complete boss, and I love his confidence. And I immediately went to watch a highlight reel of all of his knockouts, and he's a hell of a lot of fun. So it's thrilling. We've got a guy coming on the scene with that kind of confidence that must be gleaned from that kind of success. You know, how many times have we seen somebody like that? It's rare, and I love the buzz that he's getting off of it.
Well, I guess the only other thing I wanted to say, actually, before I forget and before we go, was it came out that this fight card and the main event in particular actually did fairly good numbers. I think it was just under 3 million viewers at its peak, which is great news, frankly. I don't have a dog in this race, network race, you know, so you know, do you have any comment on the success of that?
Boxing apparently is not dead after, what, 120 years of the proclamation. No, I mean, I think put good fights on TV. People are going to watch. It's pretty basic, but I mean, it's boxing. I don't see it any different as, you know, hamburger, fried chicken, you know, a milkshake, whatever. Like, it's just, it works. You don't need to do that much to it. If it's decent quality, you know, there's a market for it. And you put somebody like Lomachenko in there against Lopez, they're fun to watch. I mean, even though there wasn't some electrifying highlight reel knockout or whatever, it was dramatic. There was tension. There was good stakes, you know, great, you know, as good a casting as boxing can offer. It's on TV, not from the goodness of their hearts, but because it would have done absolutely buttfuck nothing on pay-per-view. I think, like, everybody I've talked to in boxing inside of the sport has acknowledged that. But who gives a shit? Move in this direction. Broaden the audience. You know, expose them to the product and get more people hooked. Stop catering to just the junkies. And I think that this was evidence of that. You know, excuse me, I think upwards of like 3 million people watching it is fantastic. And I think if you get some more of these kind of fights on of this level of competition and personnel, you're going to get iconic outcomes, which people are going to revisit and talk about. And that's the direction we want to go in the sport, is not the Mayweather model where people buy the fight and they think that they've won, that it's a big success. That's not a big success. It's a big success if people want to watch the next one. You right. know, if it's a big success to create characters where we don't care who they're fighting, like Arturo Gatti. It's, when is he fighting? We need more of that. And we need more people to be exposed to the characters that boxing has that represent that. And Teofimo Lopez, after this performance, is on his way to being somebody who represents that. And I think it's fantastic.
I'm so glad that you said that, because that's so often when people talk about boxing's health, or, you know, why aren't you enthusiastically supporting this card or this card? It's worth asking, you know, is this the kind of card, like, are people going to be moving forward after watching this? Are they going to be going, I need to see more of that? That's a 100% relevant question. So I'm happy you bring that up. But no, it was overall a solid card. The main event itself was kind of what sold it and, you know, made it worth watching. So I'm happy that it it was successful. I'm happy that it went well and was entertaining. We needed that. Yeah, for sure.
And we need more of it. We need a lot more of it. Like, don't make this an anomalous situation. This should not be the exception. This should be the rule.
I agree. And we are junkies, but, you know, we're not the kind of junkies that just want to shoot up that bullshit street heroin, bro. We need to go to the high-level dealers. I need that shit uncut. You know what I'm saying? I need that chronic. I need the dank. Don't give me that fucking, you know, don't give me no Bammer weed. We don't smoke that shit in the SFC. That's my high school days. So anyway, yeah, I'm happy to see that it's kind of once again proven that if you give us a good product, that, like, we'll buy it.
I absolutely. And I think you'll get, you know, this was a good one. This got the attention. I think it was, you know, you could see the quality of these guys. And I think in the future, you know, if Lomachenko fought every round of that fight, I think you could have had a tremendous fight. I think you could have had a fight of the year. The drama of him risking the power that we saw with Lopez, it would have been a hell of a great fight. But instead, what you saw was somebody cautious and timid, and you're hearing, you know, the lead up about how extraordinary he is and bionic and superhuman and all of that. And I think fans will kind of be like, this disparity between how he's built and what we're seeing, what's going on here?
How many fans went in, you know, being sold that and then watching it and going, I thought they said this guy, I thought they said he was good. What happened? Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a fair, you know, if I'm a non-fan or kind of like a part-time fan, I'm asking myself, so why are they saying that? Why are they billing him? Well, that's all I'm saying, man.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And I think that that's a danger is, you know, you create or Ronda Rousey created or a combination. Obviously that's what it is a combination of Ronda Rousey's style and her image and her demeanor and the hype of allowing somebody like that to transcend combat sports, transcend sports. And then what the sport wants to say is she's so incredible and once in a lifetime that whoever could topple this thing must be the most extraordinary sort of world-shaking character, and it's just not the case. Is as soon as she loses, instead of it being clearly this new character has assumed the role, that doesn't happen. It causes us to question the hype that built up somebody who was clearly not that good. And I'm not saying she wasn't good. I'm saying she wasn't as good as she was built. And Lomachenko gave credence to his critics with this fight, just as Rigondeau did the same thing when he lost. He quit.
Yeah.
When he was really in a crunch, he quit. He came up with a lame excuse, and rightfully, people attack him, and his stock goes way down. That's happened with Lomachenko. If he is a great fighter, and this was an off performance, if this was Ali versus Ken Norton or Ali versus Leon Spinks 1, they come back and they do something that surprises us. And I would love to see that happen. I'm a big fan of Lomachenko. I'm a big fan of Lopez. I love when boxing gives me a no-lose situation because I'm excited by both guys. And that's what this was. But yeah, it could be even better if there's a rematch. So I hope there is a rematch. If there's not, I hope both guys go out and try to be even better than, you know, than they've been billed in the past, that they continue to improve, and maybe later on down the road, maybe they have tune-up fight or whatever, but they come back and fight, because I thought there was real room. There was a lot of potential for this fight being better than it was based on how good these guys are. I just don't think we saw fully what their chemistry was. There was a kind of, you know, it was a bit of a, they went to first base or second base, but we didn't see the home run in terms of the actual chemistry that they have. And, you know, we hope that it could be even better.
Yeah, I agree. And you kind of reach a level of promotional hyperbole where the reality cannot possibly match, you know, what that hyperbole is trying to convey. And that's at least in part what I think happened with Lomachenko. But, you know, who knows what that level of marketing will be in boxing's future, but we can only hope.
Well, it just makes you appreciate when Mayweather says he's better than Ali. You go back and you watch the fights of the Four Kings. You understand they had just as much, if not more, talent in many cases than Floyd, and they're risking it all against unbelievable competition. And sometimes they're losing. Sugar Ray Leonard is losing against Duran. You know, Duran is going in against Hearns. He's losing.
And that's what happens when you take risks.
It's
what it is.
And well, I want boxing to go back in that direction because it's maybe not as good for the fighters, but it's a hell of a lot better for the sport. And we just need to do things in the sport to incentivize the best product possible. And then just like we're saying with this, expose it to as many people as possible long term and for the, you know, medium term for the health of the sport. It's the right thing to do rather than very few people making a pile of money and everybody else living on scraps. I think this fight shows us that, like, invest in this, move in this direction, because there's room for it.
And it's sellable. It is sellable. You just, you know, you can't push bullshit all the time is the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, everybody, I very much appreciate it. If you listened in to our recap of Lopez Lomachenko, a lot of fun. Brenna, I also appreciate you spending the time to do it, man. And thank you for getting out of playing in traffic.
Yeah. No, it was lots of fun. And yeah, I was really excited by this fight. And we've got some good ones coming on soon. God, Tyson Jones, that's still, if that happens, God help us.
the future is still very much wide open as far as what exactly is going down. Fights are kind of being canceled and rescheduled here and there, but that's just kind of what we have for when we have it. But in the meanwhile, do me one favor, and actually it's a cluster of favors all into one. If you're on social media, especially if you're on Twitter, follow Bryn Jonathan Butler on Twitter at Brynicio, Brynicio. But also do me a favor alongside that and check out his podcast for The Ring. You have tourist information, and you have No Happy Endings. And, yeah, go ahead and subscribe to those and check those out if you would, please. And if you're, again, on social media, follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. And I guess since we're plugging other projects here, I also host the Hannibal Boxing Podcast, where I talk to a number of different authors and also a couple hip-hop artists thus far. We're going to be branching out in different directions, blah, blah, blah. If you're on Facebook, like the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page there, and whatever podcast app you use to listen to the show, subscribe, give us a rating. That's pretty much it, Bryn. You're a good dude. I'll talk to you soon, man.
And I just say, also, if you're in New Jersey, there is a guy out there on the streets. Be careful. But if you need to do some shopping for groceries, there's a guy who's bagging groceries right now who'd appreciate it. That's Bobby Shez.
Hashtag blame Bobby, everybody.
Blame Bobby. Blame Bobby for COVID.
Blame him for whatever you'd like.
You can blame him for COVID, and then he's got the men's IQ to solve it. So it's fine.
Yep, it's win twice, brother. That's it.
All right, take care, everybody.
All right, everybody. Take it easy.
Oh, when you hear me holler, baby.